Hi, I'm Robert Mundy, a prosthodontist in New York City. On this episode of Just a Dentist podcast, we're talking about microplastics in oral care. We had quite a tough time researching this product. One is that there is information all over the place, not a ton of it, a hard topic to research, and there's a lot of new things coming out. Also, dental products are constantly changing. So in this first part, we'll talk about what plastics are, what ones you need to avoid exposing yourself to, what are the health impacts of being exposed to plastics, what are the routes that you can be exposed, and then the different at-home products that you can use to take care of yourself that you may have an exposure to, and how to avoid them or how to deviate. And we'll follow this up with the second part, where we'll go into the actual treatments that we do as dentists with our patients, where you may be exposed to plastics of different types. Think about retainers and fillings and such. So the next episode, we'll get into that more. And like I said, this episode, we want to focus more on the things that you do when you're not with us and how you can limit your exposure to try to be healthier and try to minimize the negative health impacts that you expose yourself to from flossing, brushing, and the different things that you do. As you know, they're everywhere, and it's kind of hard to understand what to avoid and what not to avoid. But let's go through that a little bit now and try to figure out ways that we can try to limit our exposure of harmful products. In researching this topic, I kept falling back to the thing I always think about, and it's cigarette companies in the 1930s and 40s. I always think about when everything that we're doing in dentistry is in healthcare, like, what are we missing? What are we advocating and supporting in the use of our patients that will end up being as cigarettes are and cigarette smoke in our health? So in the 1930s and 40s, tobacco companies would use doctors in their advertisements to promote smoking, saying that they endorse this brand because it's healthier than the other brand. You know, here we are now with knowing the effects of tobacco use. And I wonder, what are the tobacco products of our modern day and what are we missing? This may be one of them. I know some dentists that have overall avoided putting plastic fillings in their patients because of this reason. And we'll get more to that in our next episode. But let's start focusing on, firstly, what are plastics and what do you need to be aware of? What are the main chemicals to think about that can have a negative impact? So first off, let's talk about size. Microplastics and nanoplastics. Microplastics are particles smaller than 5 millimeters, and nano are smaller than 1 micrometer. You can see microplastics typically. Nanoplastics you cannot. They're everywhere in our environment, in the air, in our food, in the water that we drink. And the issue is that when you ingest them or are exposed to them, you can actually absorb them either through your blood, through your skin, through your mouth, and they can actually pass through your blood-brain barrier. A chemical family that you need to be aware of, and you've been hearing about this for years, is BPA. These are the phenols, but it's not just BPA, it's BPS and BPF. These are phenol rings that are connected with a carbon bridge, right? They are used to harden plastic, to make things more rigid. Water bottles, epoxy, can linings, resins. Although BPA has been decreasing over the years, BPS and BPF have been supplemented, and they have the same health concerns. You can look at the bottom of your plastic containers for a 3 or 7 code, which may indicate BPA presence. It's a recycling code, and it may indicate that it's present in that material. Main problem with these phenols is that they can mimic estrogen and bind where estrogen can, 1,000 to 2,000 times stronger than the actual bond of estrogen itself. Luckily, these can have a short half-life and be detectable in urine of adults after being exposed to it in several hours, but there's still that stays there despite clearing a large percentage of it. Aside from hormonal factors in estrogen, we can also have disruption of thyroid function and serotonin system. The primary concern is developing exposure of early childhood and pregnant individuals. The next category we talk about and you hear anywhere on social media are the forever chemicals, the PFAS. Think Teflon. These are hydrocarbons and they have a hydrogen replaced with a fluorine. What does that mean? It means it helps to make things more resistant to water, oil, stain-resistant products. Helps to make things less sticky, reduce the friction in the product itself. And so the fluorine introduction can actually make them stronger and prevent them from breaking down. Prevents it from breaking down the environment and also in your body, right? Nonstick cookware, waterproof clothing, stain-resistant carpets, food packaging. The issue is that these chemicals can mimic fatty acid in your body and disrupt metabolism. They can also compete with binding of thyroid hormones. They're extremely persistent, and the half-life of these could be decades in your body. They are directly linked with thyroid suppression, immune dysfunction, increased cancer rates, and again, the elimination of them is very slow. You can get some elimination through urine and through the bile system, but these chemicals, named forever, are quite appropriately in the environment and in our bodies. And the last group of chemicals we'll talk about are the phthalates. These are the opposite of the BPAs. These make plastics more flexible. Think about a black plastic food container, lid of a coffee cup. They're found in personal care products, fragrances, detergents. And these are actually hidden in a lot of the fragrances that we use because it helps the scent to last longer. These act, again, on the hormonal system. They can disrupt the development of malproductive organs. They are absorbed through your skin, unlike microplastics. And the primary source of these phthalates is personal care products and processed food. Now let's get into some of the actual health concerns as proven with these plastics. So the first thing is the accumulation in the body. Microplastics simply don't pass through the body. They accumulate in tissues. They can cross through the blood-brain barrier. Studies have actually found microplastics in human tissues as brain, liver, placenta, and testes. Part of the challenge with knowing the real impact on our bodies is testing. It's hard to take a sample of someone's brain and figure out how much plastic they have, obviously, because we're living. So it's a little hard to really assess someone's actual exposure and accumulation. Some people probably accumulate it more than others, some less than others. Some have better clearance mechanisms. Hard to know where you stand and what your exposure is. The most concerning of these particles are those smaller than 10 microns. The issue is they get absorbed more and can get held in these tissues more prevalent than larger ones. One issue is that they actually disrupt the endocrine process. BPA and BPS mimic estrogen, as we've said previously, and they can disrupt the hormone signaling pathways. Phthalates can actually act in the mechanism to block testosterone. PFAS can disrupt thyroid function by competing with the natural hormones. These disruptors affect the body's feedback loops for hormone regulation. The impact is actually concerning during pregnancy and early development, can have significant development issues. There are studies that have found actual development issues in those that are exposed to these materials at higher rates. There are neurological issues where microplastics can cross into the brain, causing inflammation in critical areas such as the hippocampus, which is responsible for memory, the prefrontal cortex, responsible for emotional regulation and decision-making. Individuals' brains that have a higher level of microplastics have been found to have an elevated inflammatory markers such as cytokines, TNF-alpha, interleukin-6. There are actual linkage to this with neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, dementia, and Parkinson's. There are cardiovascular issues. BPA can disrupt calcium signaling in the heart muscles. Phthalates can act as cardiodepressors, potentially slowing heart function. BPA can get incorporated into the arterial walls. Studies have found that the likelihood of cardiovascular death is elevated with the increase of BPA. Reproductive health is also affected. Female fertility can be reduced by 50% with high exposure. Males can have plastics found directly in their sperm, reducing sperm quantity and quality, disrupting development of male reproductive organs. And prenatal exposure has been linked to neurological and developmental issues. So as we can see, there are a significant amount of impact on our health at an exposure rate that is somewhat unhealthy. And we do not know what that rate is for you individually across the board. And it's hard to measure where you're being exposed to. So to focus on reducing your exposure, let's think about things that have high impact changes, things that you can do easily, and some of the harder things that you can also do that might have a larger impact. So replace food containers, move to glass or stainless steel. Avoid heating plastics or avoid hot food in plastics. Think about consuming filtered water or water in glass containers like I am right now while we record this podcast. Think about the air quality where you are, and when you're inside and outside. Think about the personal care products that you use. Think about phthalate-free products, fragrance-free products. Reduce the consumption of highly processed food and try to analyze the things that you come in contact with throughout the day and see if there's something you can supplement them with. So now let's go into how you're exposed and the different routes of where your body can consume microplastics or forever chemicals and such. First way we'll talk about is breathing it in, inhalation. This accounts for somewhere between 10 to 20% of your actual exposure of microplastics. Particles that are smaller than 2.5 microns, PM2.5 as they're called, can enter your bloodstream through your lungs. The main sources are synthetic fibers, your household, dust, car interiors. The most concerning route due to the small particle size, you get a deeper penetration as we spoke about previously. Again, think about the indoor air and the outdoor air, the carpets that you have or furniture you may be using. Household dust will contain it. And now think about your heating and air conditioning system and how your air is being ventilated. Consider air filters at home if you have a high number of synthetic fibers or if you're spending a lot of time at home. The outdoor air is also contaminated with plastics. Tire wear is a significant source of plastics. So I live in an urban environment. We're recording this in the Upper East Side of New York City right now. There's a lot of cars driving around despite congestion pricing. I could just assume that if you're living in a more urban area, consider the air quality and how much time you're spending outside in environments where there are vehicles or construction sites. Industrial emissions and manufacturing facilities release a large percentage of these particles. I want to just reiterate, the particle size matters. Those smaller sizes, smaller than 2.5 microns, can cross into the bloodstream through the lungs. And this does account, like we said before, for a decent percentage of the plastics that we're exposed to. The next source of exposure, and the primary source, is ingestion. This is the main exposure of pathway for most chemicals. Seafood accumulates through the marine food chain. Waters are polluted. Our water itself, both tap and bottled water, contain microplastics. Salt, because of the pollution of the oceans, can contain microplastics also. Produce, plants absorb micro and nanoplastics from contaminated soil and the water source. Processed food has a higher level of microplastics and contamination due to the processing and the packaging of these foods. The highest phthalate concentrations are found in dairy, grains, and pork. So the food sources, think about seafood, right? Fish and shellfish accumulate microplastics because the oceans are accumulating them as the amount of processed foods are so prevalent in our society. Salt contains a high percentage of it. So be aware, you can Google and search what salts have been tested and not tested. So I just did this recently to look at what salts we're buying and cooking with at home to see to make sure we're using the proper types that are clean of all plastics. Fruits and vegetables also are exposed to nanoplastics through the environment, through the water source, and the soil. Our food supply, our livestock are contaminated with microplastics from the environment they're in and from the feed and the processing. And then again, processed food has the highest levels due to the way how highly manufactured they are, and through the process of manufacturing, they are exposed to a very large amount of chemicals and plastics. Bottled water contain a large amount of microplastics, flavored water, sodas, all types of beverages, because they are stored in plastic and the plastic leaches into these substances. Tap water can also be contaminated because of the water systems are themselves exposed to microplastics in the environment. Beer, milk, wine contain microplastics because of the water content. And hot beverages can be heated in plastics or plastic kettles, can increase plastic leaching into the liquid, or also every time you go to buy a coffee, they're put into a cup lined with plastic with a plastic lid. So try to lessen plastic containers, right? The plastic leaches out when the food is acidic, hot, or fatty. So some people can bring their own containers, their own stainless steel coffee cups to get coffee. Plastic wrap touching your food can also expose the plastics right into the food directly. Reheating in plastic or hot food. Think about delivery food or takeout being put into a plastic container, a soup container, and it's a soft plastic and is leaching chemicals into your soup. Also consider plastic utensils and cutting boards just to reduce the exposure that you have. Again, the name of the game here is not elimination. The name of the game is, how can I reduce my exposure? You might be traveling, you're at the airport, there's no way to avoid it. But in your everyday life, the majority of what you do, you can probably avoid using plastic utensils. You can be mindful of where you order from and where your food is stored. Rotisserie chicken being stored in a plastic container from the grocery store or a plastic bag at Costco could contribute to your plastic exposure. The next thing is quite obvious, skin contact. We're touching things all day long with plastic in them. Personal care products and dental products, which we'll get into shortly, have microplastics throughout them. Some contain microbeads, although less and less products are containing the actual microbeads, which used to be a huge exposure of plastics. Lotion shampoos contain phthalates that can absorb right through your skin. Sunscreens contain plastics commonly, and they are directly part of the UV exposure, warming the plastic on your skin and then absorbing it. And again, like we spoke about previously, fragrances. Make sure you look at what you're using and see if they contain phthalates as stabilizers to make the scents last longer. The other thing that we can get exposed to on our skin is our clothing. Synthetic fabrics, polyester, nylon, and acrylic. These are in constant contact with your skin and you can absorb them directly through your skin. So try to think about taking new clothing and cleaning them and washing them. Try to wash the chemicals away and washing them with chemical-free detergents. The fabrics that we wear that are waterproof or stain resistant commonly contain PFAS. Also think about your skin contact in terms of thermal receipts. They have a high amount of BPA, and also some plastic gloves can leach chemicals with prolonged use. And lastly, there are plastics in all of our electronics. Carlo's microphone right here has some plastic in it. So just be mindful of your skin contact and how you use your materials and things in your life and how you expose them to heat. Okay, so how do they get incorporated into dental products? Let's get into this. A few things to consider. You need to think about your oral hygiene routine and the steps in which you do it, right? Are you rinsing, flossing, cleaning between your teeth, water picking, brushing and flossing, your toothpaste, your toothbrush? Plastics can be used in all of these products, from the packaging to the material themselves, inside your toothpaste, part of the toothbrush. The mouth rinse is stored in plastic, retainers, braces, bonding, temporary fillings, all sorts of things in the dental world contain plastics and can expose you to them. The other challenge in the dental world is companies are constantly changing their packaging, their name, how they're marketing things. The same product can have three different names, and then they can next year change it to another name. So it's somewhat hard to keep on a track of what the product is and what it contains. So the first place to start to think about your exposure to plastics is the health of your mouth. Inflamed tissues absorb more things than healthy tissues. That's part of the inflammation process. Please check out our inflammation podcast on for more information about that. No? It's a shameless plug. So an inflamed mouth can absorb more things, more plastics than a healthy mouth. We'll start and end with the point of make sure that you are limiting or preventing inflammation in your mouth. Work with your hygiene team, work with your dentist to make sure that you're doing everything you can to limit the amount of inflammation, and that will limit the amount of absorption in your mouth due to exposure to the foods and the waters and the things we spoke about already, or also your dental products that you use. Now I want to jump into going through specific products and specifically how you can be exposed through the different courses of your oral hygiene journey. We'll start with the single most important part is flossing, cleaning between your teeth. So there are studies directly linking microplastics to dental floss to systemic absorption. And these studies are limited, and we need to do further research to understand how you yourself can be exposed to it during flossing. But there are flosses that contain PFAS, Teflons, phenols, and those, when used, are associated with a higher level of chemicals found in the body, opposed to using natural products that do not contain these. So let's think about the different types of floss. The most common type, and my personal favorite floss, which I'll no longer be using, are nylon-based flosses, right? These are made of synthetic nylon. It actually sheds microplastic particles during use due to the friction along teeth. They're durable, they're inexpensive, and mechanically, they're extremely effective. I find them the easiest floss to use for my patients, and these are Oral-B Essential Floss, Colgate Total Floss, Reach Waxed, Crest Glide Original, and Johnson & Johnson Reach, which has been my personal favorite floss, which I'm working towards finding an alternative. The next type of floss are those, think about the Teflon-coated floss, right? PTFE, polytetrafluoroethylene flosses. These are similar to the non-stick cookware, and these slide between your teeth very easily. The issue with these are these PFAS are forever chemicals, right? It makes floss not fraze easily. You know, the word glide is used for a brand of floss because it makes it more smooth. It can glide between your teeth. So Oral-B Glide, Crest Glide, Sensodyne Pro Enamel, Gentle Floss, Colgate Total Mint are all flosses that contain these forever chemicals. We had a rep from one of the companies here recently, and they're shifting away from these chemicals, but they're still made of nylon. So they shifted away from the Teflon-coated floss to a nylon floss. That's optics. That's not actually moving in the right direction, guys. Then we can talk about there are natural fiber options, plant or animal sources. These are opposed to synthetic fibers, right? The most common fibers are made from silk, plant-based fibers, could be bamboo, could be cotton. The brands to look for here is Radius, Dental Lace, Terra & Co., Boca, and Dr. Tongues. These flosses are considered to be more natural options to not have the chemicals you need to be concerned about. One of the more effective and traditional flosses that were available before these synthetic products were even made were silk flosses, right? They are biodegradable and coated with wax. They're more expensive than synthetic options. They're harder to make. Some of these may be coated with wax, but typically the waxes are natural waxes, beeswax, types that are more eco-friendly and more friendly to your body. Be mindful that some are coated with petroleum-based waxes, so do some research to figure out what type of floss that is. And what I would say is to really try out different brands. If you were talking about floss in general, forgetting about synthetic or non-synthetic, I always would invite a patient to try different flosses in their mouth to see what works best for them, because all floss is not created equal and all mouths are not the same. So with this journey, I would strongly suggest that this is a place to move to a non-synthetic formula. I think this is a very simple way of limiting your exposure to plastics and chemicals by using something that's sliding against your teeth, against your gum, in the most inflamed place in your mouth, which is between your teeth, to help to clean the teeth. It's essential that you do this, and I think that it's an easy way to limit your exposure to plastics. Also, think about flavoring agents, essential oils, or other things that may be coated into the floss, and make sure that they are healthy things. It's very easy to research now which flosses you may like. And again, a few of them. Radius is a brand that is making healthier flosses. Terra & Co., Dr. Tongue, Boca, and also Risewell. And if you're looking to specifically avoid all synthetic materials, make sure you look for silk floss that explicitly states that it uses all natural wax and coatings and that is plastic-free. Be mindful of the packaging. It's also a challenge there. And lastly, we'll talk about plant-based flosses that are usually made from corn or bamboo fibers. And these are often coated with plant-based waxes, free of PFAS and microplastics. These are a newer product in the market, and I'm sure more will come out by the time this podcast goes live. So it's the kind of area that you'll work with your dental hygiene team and research online and contact companies to see what they're making, what's in their products. We strongly would recommend cocoa floss here, but that's a textured polyester, has coconut oil on it, and polyester is a synthetic nylon. Gum expanding floss expands, again, nylon-based. Toms of Maine natural wax floss is a nylon floss with plant-based wax. So as you see, as this is a newer category of being looked at, I'm sure these companies will respond. In the meantime, try to gravitate towards one of the healthier products with less materials in them. So what we find, and the challenging part of this whole process, is that product formulation can change, manufacturing can change, the materials that it's packaged in can change, but generally, stay away from things that are smooth or Teflon coated to make sure that you're not exposing yourself to these chemicals. The plant-based options and silk options are healthier, more environmentally friendly, and may reduce your exposure to microplastics and forever chemicals. This will come at a higher price point, and it will be challenging just going through the process of finding a replacement product to what you're commonly using. Another way to clean between your teeth is either using a water pick or interdental brushes. Interdental brushes themselves may be made of plastic or have plastic coating on them, so be aware of what they're made of. And a water pick is something I could strongly suggest. Be mindful of filling the tank, the canister, with water that is warm. Again, putting hot or warm liquids in plastic will increase your exposure. So if you want to avoid flossing, which I do not think you should avoid it, you could reduce it possibly, but still mechanically floss, and incorporating a water pick into your regimen might be a good way of reducing your plastic exposure. So when you're done with flossing, you'll turn to brushing your teeth. Let's talk about toothpaste. Recent studies found microplastics are in many toothpaste, with the annual emissions reaching billions of grams. Research has identified three main exposure routes. One, from ingesting, just simple ingesting some of the toothpaste after brushing. Two, absorbing it through your oral mucosa. And three, the environmental exposure after disposal. A 2019 review in Environmental Studies and Technology suggested microplastics might cause oxidative stress and inflammation to human tissues through brushing. In a 2022 study, found that microplastics in the human blood for the first time. So this is all related. In 2023, a study found that microplastics are present even in microplastic-free toothpaste. These toothpastes still contain micro and nanoplastics from the packaging and the manufacturing process, even though the material itself did not contain any. Research also found that toothpaste-derived microplastics can be absorbed into the body and assist heavy metal transport. Like with floss and the other things we're being exposed to, there are limited long-term studies here. It's uncertain about the actual threshold level of human and health effects. It's challenging to standardize detection methods, and it's hard to understand the interaction with your body, your tissues, and the oral microbiome with these plastics. So many toothpaste also use microplastics as abrasives or for color or for texture. This can lead to more ingestion. Look for ingredients like polyethylene or polypropylene on the label. So PEG, which is polyethylene glycol, or PPG, polypropylene glycol, are two of the main ways that you can be exposed to plastics and these chemicals in your toothpaste. Also, carbomer, which is acrylic acid polymer, right? These are thickening agents, stabilizers, and they enhance the texture of toothpaste. Toothpaste used to contain microbeads up until 2015, where there's a microbead-free Waters Act. And this prohibited manufacturers from actually putting these plastic microbeads into cosmetics and toothpaste and remove them all from being sold in 2018. Part of the issue with toothpaste is the packaging. Plastic tubes typically made of high-density polyethylene or low-density polyethylene will lead to contamination of your toothpaste, even if the toothpaste itself is not made with plastics. The cap itself and the dispensers can contain it. The plastic laminated cardboard boxes, plastic shrink wrap for the secondary packaging. So you have exposure through the entire process. Currently, there is no direct evidence linking microplastic in toothpaste to systemic exposure in humans. Studies have confirmed the presence of microplastics in certain toothpaste products. Research specifically examining the absorption into the human body is lacking and needs to be done. Part of the challenge with this topic is we are in the beginning stages of understanding what it is, the exposure, and the health impact. So stay tuned, but I will reinforce that you might as well try to limit your exposure because it does seem like there is some pretty interesting evidence that there are negative health impacts of being exposed to these chemicals on a consistent basis. And it's simple to remove it by drinking cleaner water, having better packaging, having a different floss, different dental products, different health products. So studies have found while ingesting toothpaste is relatively low, but there are concerns about the accumulation over time. As we said, the half-life on some of these chemicals does not break down very quickly in our body, can impact the tissues. More research is needed to understand the actual health impact. Since this is a mostly topical situation, we are not concerned as much if your mouth is healthy and if you rinse thoroughly afterwards. If you are in good health and you're careful about not ingesting toothpaste, then the exposure rate will be limited. So floss, I think you can move to an alternative that is plastic and chemical free. Toothpaste will be more challenging. Move to a toothpaste that is chemical microplastic free, and be careful how you use it. One area that I unfortunately have accepted that I cannot completely remove these chemicals is my toothbrush. I personally advocate strongly and personally use an electric toothbrush and will continue to do so. This is one area of my life that I do not have a good alternative, and I will accept the exposure, but I will work hard to minimize it, and I'll give you some tools and some tricks that you can do to help minimize your exposure with your toothbrush. 3.5 billion toothbrushes are sold worldwide every year. Wish it was more. Think about the population, but that's not enough. But the average person uses over 300 toothbrushes in their life. Most conventional toothbrushes contain 1.5 to 3 grams of plastic. Bristle materials are made of nylon, the most common material, nylon 6. It was invented in 1938 by DuPont, replacing natural boar bristles. The problem is this is a non-biodegradable synthetic polymer. These are of very narrow diameter and very densely packed. Less common is polyester bristles. These are similar synthetic polymers to nylon. These are also non-biodegradable. And then we have thermoplastic elastomer bristles used in some specialty brushes. These are softer than nylon and less durable. The handle, of course, are almost all made of plastic. So how does the exposure of microplastics occur from toothbrushes over time? The first thing to think about is your bristle degradation. This occurs via brushing with toothpaste, abrasiveness, and also just brushing over time. 20 to 30% of the bristle volume can be lost over 3 months. Then it accelerates after that. So generally, this is not all absorbed. There's no good way to assess what you're actually being exposed to. There's no good way to test it. One thing is wet storage of your toothbrush accelerates degradation and the solubility of plastics due to the water. UV exposure can also weaken the polymer structure. So the strategies that you need to have here is one, how are you brushing? Brush gentle. Do not use abrasive toothpastes. Use a new toothbrush. Change your toothbrush frequently. Store it dry and try to limit the exposure that it has to sunlight or UV and heat. A 2021 study said a single toothbrush can release over 100,000 microplastic particles over its lifetime. And so the average release of 36 milligrams of microplastics per year from one toothbrush can occur. The particle size can range from 10 to 100 microns. These are microparticles and some a little larger than that. The immediate pathways during use, there's two ways. One, oral retention. These particles, the microplastics, are actually lodged between your teeth and in your gingival crevice, in your gum tissues, and then can also get adhered into biofilms. You then can absorb that into your system through that manner. The other is ingestion, just like with toothpaste, swallowed in saliva during and after brushing, and it's estimated 10 to 30% of shed particles can be ingested if you're not careful and do not rinse thoroughly afterwards. The other question is, what kind of water are you rinsing with? In my home, we've put in a whole house water filter so that in my bathroom, that water is filtered. It's something you may want to think about. The alternative to conventional plastic toothbrushes are bamboo toothbrushes, where the material is made of bamboo. You know, these hotels will have them, right? Yeah. They're not the greatest brushes. It just doesn't feel as good. It's not as easy to use. They get dirty faster. Some can also have these oil bristles. It's still a polymer, but they're considered more renewable. The conventional toothbrushes, if you switch to a type of bamboo brush, you would have a large reduction, though. Still some exposure, but a 70 to 90% reduction of exposure of plastic compared to a conventional. So you are getting an improvement there of your exposure rate. The bristles still shed microplastics similar to a conventional brush. It's just less. The biodegradable handle does reduce some of your exposure and also a better environmental impact. So problem is that these brushes can grow mold if they're not dried properly. They're not as durable. And they often still do use nylon products. There are some natural bristle alternatives, such as boar hair, pig hair, horse hair brushes. These were used before nylon bristles existed. These are biodegradable and they are less consistently performing than the synthetic bristles. They don't clean as well. There are plant-based bristles that are made of coconut fiber or corn fiber, just like with floss. These are biodegradable, but often they're a little harder than nylon, so they might be harder to use to not harm yourself. And just the microplastic considerations are that the true natural fibers shed particles that are biodegradable, but there's some type of plastic used in a lot of them, and the plant options may still be modified with some type of polymers. So to calculate how much exposure you're getting from using a synthetic plastic brush, it's based on the wear measurements, how frequently you brush, how hard you brush, and how long you're using that toothbrush for. The average toothbrush can shed 0.3 to 0.3 micrograms per brushing session. That's about 3 to 9 milligrams per person per month. So the annual exposure can be 36 to 100 milligrams per person. It's not all absorbed since some of the particles are larger, and they're not all microplastics, so keep that in mind. Again, we don't have an actual direct piece of information to give you of the exposure and how to limit it. So as I started this segment saying that my brush is not something I will replace, I will continue using my Sonicare or Oral-B electric toothbrush with synthetic fibers, and that's that studies have shown that as of right now, our overall oral plastic, microplastic exposure from toothbrushing is only 0.5 to 2% of the total exposure rate. I will make sure I dry my toothbrush every time. I will make sure that I replace it often, and I'll make sure that I'm careful with how I brush, not to brush too hard. Lastly, I will rinse thoroughly after brushing to make sure that I can limit my exposure to plastics through the brushing process. And just timing-wise, how often should you replace your toothbrushes? I think that it comes down to a convenience and cost issue, right? That's what it comes down to. The more frequently you replace it, it's just annoying to have to deal with and also more costly. So you might want to think, some people could say as often as 1 month. Right now, the recommendation is about 3 months or less is what you should use a single brush for. Lastly, let's dip into the area of mouth rinses. Now, if you were looking to avoid plastic exposure, my recommendation would be to remove mouth rinses altogether. They're stored in plastics or processed through plastics, and there are mechanisms that leach into the liquids through the process of either storage or the manufacturing. A lot of them are stored in polyethylene containers or bottles or high-dense polymers, and it's something that I think that will have such a low impact in your health. I think using a mouth rinse has such a low-level impact, positive impact in your health, that the possible negative impact of introduction plastics into your and chemicals into your system, if you were to look to limit plastic exposure, I would say remove the mouth rinse from your regimen altogether. I would deviate my floss. I would look for a plastic-free toothpaste, and I would continue using a plastic toothbrush. That is my current strategy for what I'm going to do. The last thing that people frequently do is they rinse with something. And so let's spend a moment talking about microplastic chemicals and mouth rinses. I'll start by saying, if you are concerned about exposing yourself to microchemicals and microplastics and different chemicals, I would avoid mouth rinses altogether then. And at the end of this segment, we'll go over a few different ideas of things you can do on your own of possible health benefit. But most mouth rinses come in plastic bottles, right? They are packaged in polyethylene containers. They are manufactured by being exposed to high-density polyethylene, HDPE. The caps contain, the dispensing mechanism contain it. The internal bottles have plastic on them, and some contact with the entire process of manufacturing them are in contact with plastics. And so the chemicals migrate from the plastic into the liquid, even if it's not manufactured primarily with liquid. Those chemicals and those formulas containing alcohol will act as a solvent and dissolving more of the plastics into the container. And then as it's aged and as it's exposed to light, the amount of plastic can be increased in the formula itself. So microfractures of plastics can actually release particles directly into the solution, either in the bottle and through the manufacturing process. So we have to worry about the bottle material. We have to worry about the processing and packaging of the bottle itself. The processing equipment typically is made of polypropylene or PVC, and then also nylon for filtration. So the process of making mouth rinse is quite dirty in terms of the plastics. A 2022 study found that there are 5 to 23 microplastic particles per 100 milliliters in mouth rinse. So mouth rinses also have additives as stabilizers to stabilize the plastics, as phthalates. As we spoke previously, there are UV stabilizers in terms of the phenols. There are colorants and dyes in some of these, and there are also antioxidants added in the form of chemicals. These are all plastic additives in mouth rinse. There are also, like we said previously, manufacturing residues, part of the environment they're stored in, and they are a part of the active ingredient interaction with chlorhexidine and other types of rinses. So the exposure is typically you're using about 10 to 20 mLs per use for 30 to 60 seconds, and people use it 1 to 2 times a day. People also like to sometimes warm this up with water. The estimated exposure can be somewhere between 0.5 to 5 micrograms of microplastics. The monthly accumulation, if you're doing this daily, could be as high as 140 micrograms just from mouth rinse. When using, spitting out removes the majority of the larger particles. Any swallowed residue, though, will result in ingestion through your digestive tract of the microplastics. The longer you hold it in your mouth, the more likely plastics can get incorporated into the different tissues in your mouth. So you can clear it through your saliva, flowing and spitting them out, or swallowing it, which will then result in absorption. Rinsing would be the best way, or possibly avoiding them altogether. The issue is that you have potential abrasion of your soft tissues while you're using it or through the flossing and brushing process, making your mouth more absorbable to these materials. The irritation can allow for the potential plastics to get wedged in between periodontal pockets or in your biofilm, and then retention in also your tissues such as your tonsils and other anatomical areas. It has been found that microplastics can adhere to your tooth and into the microbiofilm and become part of that. This will actually alter your biofilm composition and can increase the production of biofilm. One way to avoid plastics in your mouth rinses is switching to glass packaged products. This will eliminate the leaching into the material itself from a plastic container. There still may be polymer ingredients or may be exposure of the rinse through the manufacturing process, but at least you will limit the availability of some of the plastics into the material. There are other rinses that are called natural formulas that may have reduced synthetic ingredients, but still, there still may be polymers for stability or through the manufacturing process. So if you're looking for a mouth rinse, you may want to consider a do-it-yourself option. Saltwater rinses are something I still suggest on many patients when they have issues. Simply add some clean salt, non-plastic conforming, with some warm water, and that can help with mild inflammation and healing, having no plastic or polymer additives, and also helping to heal with no chemicals. It's quite cheap too. There are herbal preparations if you can look up with different types of antimicrobial herbs, sage, chamomile, tea tree oil, and different things that have been found for healing. This is something that I'm not sure the juices exactly worth the squeeze. If you're someone who likes the mouth rinse, I would stick with saltwater rinses. The other thing that people may supplement is oil pulling. I think oil pulling is a fine thing to do as an additive to your oral hygiene routine. I do not think it's a supplement to the other areas that are important, such as cleaning between your teeth and brushing properly. So to wrap up everything, this first part, we think that you can do a good job reducing your exposure to these chemicals and these materials by deviating on which floss you're using, which toothpaste you're using, how you're brushing, and how you're maintaining your toothbrush and what you're rinsing with. I can't overstate enough how important the condition of your mouth is when you're exposing yourself to these materials. It is important that you limit the inflammation of your mouth to help to reduce the absorption and to allow your mouth to act like the barrier membrane it is supposed to be. Aside from the systemic issues for inflammation, just the local issues that we're encountering while exposing ourselves to different chemicals. So work together with your hygiene team and do some research on which products you're using. Again, turn to our show notes here. We worked pretty hard on them, and there's a lot of alternatives, a lot of information there. We expect this to be an evolving topic and changing topic that I think a year or two or 3 years from now, we'll have a lot more information, and I think products will get even better than they are right now. I think companies will become more responsible because people, they will know that individuals like ourselves will want to be using better made, cleaner materials, products to take care of ourselves and our family's health. Let us know whatever questions you have, and I look forward to joining you on the second part of this discussion, where we will talk about the actual things, the treatments that dentists do, and that can have an impact in your exposure to plastics and such chemicals as we discussed today. I wish you well. Thank you for joining me. Until next time, I'm Just a Dentist. Thank you for joining us this week. I hope you found it helpful and enjoyable. Please head to our website for our show notes and more information around the topics we discussed today. Please check us out on our YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok pages for weekly updates and other interesting topics we discuss more frequently. The information provided in this podcast is for general information and educational purposes only and is not a substitute for professional advice. Accordingly, before taking any actions based on such information, we encourage you to consult with the appropriate professionals. We do not provide any medical nor health advice. You should seek the full diagnosis and treatment from your healthcare providers for any issues or conditions you may have. No doctor and patient relationship is formed. The use or reliance of any information used from this podcast is solely at your own risk. This podcast is purely for educational and informative purposes only.